Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
September 2, 2022. Is that right? Yeah. Allegedly, according to this thing we call a calendar. So this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me speak, and the only way you find this show is if you're looking for it. The O'Chelly Effect, coming to you live from O'Chelly.com and a bunch of other radio apps and all that good stuff. Lots of ways to listen to us live, and it is Friday night when we are live. So if you're hearing us just after 8 p.m. Eastern time on that alleged date, again, the second day of August 2022, if that's when you're hearing us, we're live. And you can call in 319-527-5016, because that is the actual purpose of the Friday night show. Now, last week and the week before that, we did the Sandy Hook questions. Not a lot of feedback from you guys, but who knows, maybe we'll continue that series and get into some real questions if you want. I don't know if that's what everybody's got an appetite for. That's where we'll go, because the Friday night show is more about what you guys want to put into it. How can you put something into that show? For starters, call 319-527-5016. Direct access. New caller gets the priority as far as setting a topic or bringing up stuff. And unless we have a preset agenda, which we usually don't, that's the way it rolls on Friday nights. And tonight we got
no
zero
agenda here.
We got zero agenda. Well, we might have lots of agendas, but they're not going to dictate the way the show goes, right?
That is true.
So everybody's got agenda. Anybody who tells you, "I am fully objective," is lying to you. They just are. There's no such thing.
I don't know. I think there are some things that people can actually be objective because they actually don't give a crap. And if you don't give a crap, then it doesn't matter what side, you know, you're discussing. You can always, you know, play devil's advocate, but never really it bother you. So sometimes you have to be totally, you know, removed from something to be fully objective.
See, but right there, your objectivity is challenged, because now you'll have different levels as to why, what it is you give a crap about the least in each one of these aspects, right? So let's just begin. If you're a local reporter and you're looking at something, you go, "I'm being objective about the story I'm covering." Maybe you hate the town that you're reporting from. So you don't care to give a lot of details. Your objectivity is already lost because you've got an emotional tie to, "I don't really care what the school board's going to do. I don't really care how the traffic is. I don't got to drive on those streets." So automatically, a little less enthusiasm. Already a prejudice has taken hold, and it's not even
about... Well, I don't know, though. If you're a true journalist, you know, you should be able to answer the who, what, where, and why. Mm-hmm. When you start stating because, then you become a columnist giving your opinion. So you could totally hate the town. It might affect your productivity, but does it really affect your bias?
Well, yeah, because again, as I said, you're not going to care to explore. Okay, you're covering a crime. So yeah. You tell people the address where the crime took place. Let's just say it's a robbery. Pick a kind of robbery, BP, any kind.
Breaking and entering.
Okay, breaking and entering, residence, business, what do you think?
Residence. Okay. Took my big screen.
So you got breaking and entering on a residence. You don't really care. It's not your neighborhood. It's not your crime, so...
It's not your big screen.
It's not your TV. So, you know, it's not your TV, it's me TV. All right, yeah. Anyway, the thing is, maybe you don't even give the details what was actually stolen. Maybe you don't follow up on it. Maybe you don't even bother to ask the cops if they arrested anybody. So you've now reported a story, but you've been incomplete because of your lack of enthusiasm. You see what I mean?
Well, maybe you're just a lousy reporter and you should, you know, go work at the pawn shop where they're going to take my big screen.
Well, you might be better informed that way. And yeah, look, there is a point at which, even despite some people's best efforts, they just sort of suck at their job. But if you don't, you know, the people that are kind of phoning it in, right? I mean, look, you worked in various types of businesses. You see people that just go, "All right, I'm here to at least look like I'm doing the bare minimum so I can collect my check," right?
Yeah.
Well, that changes the level of what it is they're going to do. Maybe they don't, you know, they do the job, but they don't clean up after themselves. Right? Or they do the job, but, you know.
Well, but you do have a bias there in that you are getting paid for what you do. So maybe it's the only love of being able to make your rent payment that keeps you there. So see, you wouldn't be totally objective due to that. What I'm saying is sometimes you have to be completely removed from a situation and not care one thing about it to be objective about the actual topic. That's all.
Yeah, no, a sanitized academic point of view has its place, right? Especially with analysis in this way, if you're dispassionate. And let's go in the other direction. If you're highly motivated because you want to be competitive, right? You want to, okay, there are not so many local news sources anymore, but let's go with an existing landscape where the networks do have local TV stations, right? So let's
yes,
just,
I remember greatly Judy Baruti of Wavy TV. Was it Wavy Channel 11 Norfolk?
Yeah,
I think it was.
Sounds right. You know,
poor old Judith.
I'll tell you, Macon's got an interesting thing going on because we have this this blonde lady that every time I see her, and it's going to be really rude here, but she's got a deformed hand, which is like the key characteristic of her here in Macon. She's on, I think, the Fox affiliate. And every time she comes on, she's always trying to position herself to sort of hide the, I don't know, it's like a hook hand almost, right? So, you know, and I'm not picking on her because of it, but she also never goes outside of the studio like a lot of the other reporters to go and actually collect a piece of, like, you know, let's talk to somebody on the scene. She doesn't do any of that. Okay. Now, I don't know if it's because all of them are now carrying around their own equipment and maybe it would be a problem physically for her to do, or if she has somehow got a better celebrity status, whatever. But the thing is, local competitors, even though they're on the ABC, Fox, or NBC affiliate, they still might be competing with each other because they want to get ahead of, well, there's a scandal at City Hall, right? So they might be looking to position themselves in a better place so that they're a higher value reporter, right? I broke this story, I broke that. And maybe their enthusiasm gets them in trouble because maybe they report some things that are not so solidly sourced, right? And this is on a very small scale. That kind of, again, sort of bias, which is based on competition, which most people would think is very healthy and all that, could also distort the news. So it speaks to your point about being totally dispassionate. But almost nobody who is in that business, right, you know, except maybe the weather guy, I don't know, is going to sit there and have no view. And even the weather guy's got a view on it, like, oh, I don't want to tell you about the rain coming, but I got to tell you about the rain coming because it's going to ruin the weekend. You know?
Well, yeah, I can see your point there, but I don't know. I'm thinking back, you know, news, they have a lot of the wrong people doing the news. You know, it's a shame that they have to have so many positions that they got to fill them so they'll just snag anybody who you see for 2 or 3 days and then suddenly they're doing the 3 o'clock good morning show before the actual show starts. So, there's a lot of people that are in the wrong profession. Have you noticed that? I mean, spectrum wide.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, look. And the thing is, some of these guys are, and ladies are literally there because they've got a look. And
they
have skill with delivery, right?
Kimberly Guilfoyle. Her only reason on Fox was legs.
Yeah. Yeah, because they could put in the glass desk and, you know, and when they do
the
that,
her connections. Yeah, well, you know, being married. Who was she married to? Was it Newsom?
No, Guilfoyle, wasn't she at some, at some point she's with one of the Trumps, right?
Yeah, but I mean, before that, she divorced. He was mayor of San Francisco. Was it? Who was the mayor of San Francisco?
Oh, I don't think
she was married to some bigwig.
Yeah, it was some California politician. You're right. It might have been the mayor of L.A. though, instead of San Francisco. I don't know. I do remember though. Maybe it was Newsom. Either way,
I think she was.
Yeah, I think it was Newsom. But look, it's barely, connections are one thing. And certainly you see that, again, all the way across the spectrum, whether it's, you know, Fox News hires somebody because they were connected to XYZ, whatever, you know, and when they need an anti-Trump guy, they go and, you know, who used to work for Newt Gingrich that's still alive, you know? Okay.
Yeah.
They do that, and that's fine, whatever. But, yeah, so you got the connections there. And even on a local level, you'll find that a lot of times, you know, sometimes it's, you know, the kid that grew up in the town and they were the editor of the school newspaper and all that, and they earned it on a local level. But then there's others that it's like, well, I know that that guy is actually married to the woman who owns, you know, a certain business in town or whatever, and they might be a big advertiser on the local station, you know, local commercials, whatever. Let's just say it's a, I remember one in particular in one of the towns I lived in Jersey, that literally the guy got his job because his wife owned a whole bunch of flower shops. Okay.
Hey, like, there you go, man. Ride that wave.
Well, but his wife was buying local advertising, like through Monmouth Cablevision. And it was like, oh, no, there's no particular reason why it is he is now doing the local news. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's because his wife is literally probably putting in more money in advertising than he's supposed to get in his token paycheck to sit there and tell you, you know, the school board will be getting together this Wednesday. And that was his whole function, is like literally a five-minute section of the news. And then he was part of the, we actually cover local news, you know. And then
maybe it was a dastardly plan by the lady that owned the flower shops to get the, you know, the family discount by getting him a job there so she wouldn't pay as much for advertising. There could be a whole scheme behind this thing.
You know, I'm not going to argue with you. That's a possibility. That, you know, the reverse, right? If he's got the job there, then he can get her a deal on those ads.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. No problem. And I remember having to do like ads on the local cable for like events, like when we would do shows and we had enough advance, and maybe it was in a bigger theater, so you know you need a little advertising. The rates that we would get for, you know, those one-offs or a couple times a year ads, not as good as the people who were like constant. And if you had cable TV back then, you certainly got familiar with, yeah, all right, I've already seen this furniture store. In New Jersey, especially in the area where I lived, there was Jason's Furniture, which had advertising on like every cable channel that had available advertising, and it was like a discount furniture warehouse, right? And look at this, 35 years later, I still remember them because they were on every channel, right? And the furniture wasn't bad or anything. It wasn't like, you know, they were their own brand. They literally sold, you know, like, here, we have Serta beds and we have Simmons beds and stuff. Right? And whatever, I don't remember what, like, I was never in the market for brand new couches and dining room sets and stuff. But if I was, they had all that and bunk beds, you know, and then they would bring kids into the ad. And look, we have stuff you can furnish your child's room without breaking your budget. And, you know, again, with the really funny back in the 80s and 90s, because you would have... The sound would be like really bizarre on some of these commercials. Like everything would be smooth and all that, and the actors and all that. And then the announcer would come on and somebody forgot to mix it properly. So it'd be like, yeah, come on down to our place and blah, 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 blah. And then the announcer would come on and go, right there located on Highway 35. You know, like all distorted, super loud. And you'd be like, holy crap, what happened? Where's the sound guy? And you know that happens a lot with especially local commercials, right?
Of course.
And lawyers locally always have.
Oh,
you know,
God, lawyers. We've got a lawyer that and now he's got his grandson in all of his advertisements, personal injury lawyer. They advertise heavy around here.
Right. And there's always like one of those, you know, for generations we've been here, there's always one of those.
Oh, of course.
Right. What is it? Here is the Dozier Law Firm. And their commercials are kind of slick. They have good graphics. I mean, they put some
production. We might have represented your great-granddaddy. You never know.
Oh, exactly. Where they're like, you know, we've been here so long that, you know.
We've been here so long. We've represented somebody in your family over time.
Probably. Well, literally, I think that's what one of the local commercials in Georgia for one of these lawyers actually kind of says that, where it's like,
hell, we know everybody.
If you've been here for the past four generations, so have we. And that means that over the past 150 years, we might have represented somebody you know. Ask friends and neighbors. They'll say, and I'm like, huh.
Okay. Oh, dear Lord. We've been at it so long, we know there's more dead bodies than pine lawn.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing. When grandpa's sitting there, and now grandson has also gone to law school, dentists do that too, where it's like, you know, my grandfather came here as a dentist, and I'm like, holy crap, yeah, but when your grandfather was a dentist, you know, they were literally giving, here's a shot of whiskey, and hold still, we're going to punch you in the mouth.
They were using leeches.
Let's put a leech on them gums.
Here, this is, we're going to attach this for a few minutes, and then we'll come back and do the procedure.
Right, right. So anyway, is any of this productive, folks? I don't know, but this is what happens on Fridays.
So, who cares?
You can join in the chat room. Somebody said, hey, Chris, call in and mention Sandy Hook again. And that's fine. If you want to do Sandy Hook shows, we can do them. But I'd like to have a focus and a plan next time. So what do you think about that? Do you want to start doing more thematic shows, or every other show maybe is a theme?
Well, we can, yeah, or, you know, we can do like, you know, the third Thursday, it's theme Thursday, for the month of August or whatever, but people could send in questions. I mean, they could always email questions. We can read them and answer. I don't care what the subject is. We'll entertain no matter what the subject.
Right. Oh, I get emails on stuff when I don't ask for it, and sometimes I do and I get crickets, you know, so, but, I'll tell you what, if you guys want to start emailing ideas into the show, as far as I'm concerned, you can do it info@ocelli.com, and I'm the only one who sees that, but either way, I'll share it with B-Pete. I got one email earlier today, which was a collection of Florida news stories, I think, from our friend Face Shifter in the chat room. The collection of, I forget the title now, but I sent it to you. Did you see that?
Yes. In fact, I sent the link to myself in email so I could pull it up during the show if we wanted to and not have to rely on my phone, which I'm currently using. So let me go to my email and we'll have that standing by in case we want to discuss any of it. There were a couple in there that made me chuckle. Environmental guy teaching a session gets his arm bitten off by an alligator. That's pretty bad.
Listen, Florida, there's always an alligator story. I mean,
I guess you qualify for workman's comp on that.
I wouldn't object to a guy getting workman's comp if an alligator ate his damn arm while he was doing his job. I'm sorry, but I mean, if he was literally doing his job at the time, I think he sort of deserves the workman's comp. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it'd be hard to file a lawsuit against your employer knowing full well that you're teaching the class on alligator safety and you end up getting your arm bit off. I mean, you had to know the risk.
Well, no, you had to know the risk, but so does your employer. I mean, it's just, if you're just doing simulations and, you know, like they used to have Resusca Annie in the, in the thing when you would learn CPR, you know, unless you're using a fake mechanical alligator, and even then, I guess mishaps could occur. You got to realize, you know, live action, you can't train alligators.
Alligator bites arm off. Let's see, what does it say? Alligator bites arm off wildlife director during training session.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty bad.
That's just, and that's not even like, you know, look at the crazy people in Florida story. That's just, Florida's a crazy place. I mean, just, I've always said it's,
most of these, a lot of the programs I listen to, they have a Florida section just for the crazy crap that goes on.
Well, you got it. I mean, I really do think it's like an open air insane asylum. And I've had people tell me that it's because of its actual location on the map, that there's, you know, something about ley lines and its mystical significance. I just think that what it is, and it's strange because it kind of came up with the discussion earlier this week when I had Larry Sharp on, who is the libertarian candidate who has been knocked off the ballot in New York for governor, and he's trying to get back on, and he was on before, but, you know, the two parties, they always get together to beat up on anybody who tries to insert anything other than their crap into the paradigm, right?
Oh, yeah. We've just had a major court case here in this state concerning getting a party on the ballot.
Well, right. So
they fight like crazy. It's amazing how the Republicans and the Democrats just fight so hard against getting another voice on the ballot. I mean, it's amazing. They will go to the ends of the earth to keep it from happening because it takes votes away from our, you know, from our effort. I thought, well, you need to have somebody out there challenging you for those votes.
Well, literally, see, Larry made the perfect argument in my mind for people to go ahead and vote for him, even if you don't like him. Because honestly, if he can get a significant enough level of, and the last time that the Libertarians got a legitimate spot on the, you know, on the ballot in New York, it's funny because they go by what the governor can do. So if you can get on the, you know, as a party, if you get on the ballot in New York as a party, then that allows you to be on the ballot like in all those other down ballot positions.
Yeah, that's what's happening here on the Green Party. The state board of elections recognized the Green Party, and then the Democrats especially started filing complaints because then the courts came out and said, yeah, the Green Party has to appear on the ballot for the midterm elections, which, what's two months away. And the Democrats fought like crazy. They've still got lawsuits trying to challenge that and put an injunction in there to keep it from happening. But it's taken them years. I think the Green Party's been at this now for about 10 years, fighting and fighting just to appear on the ballot. So now we have Republicans. When you file or when you register to vote, you know, you give them a party affiliation, and you have Republican, Democrat, unaffiliated, I think Libertarian, and now you can choose Green Party as your, if you want to be a member of a party, listed as a member of a party.
Right. So
it's taken them a long time to be able to get it done, and it's cost, you know, I would say millions probably over time fighting the establishment just to give a chance, you know, just have a chance to be listed on a ballot. It's crazy.
Right. And you would think that the Libertarian Party would be more established in general than a lot of these other possible third parties. But again, in New York, they got on the ballot and then they sort of changed the rules, which happens. And by the way, it's not always the Democrats who do this. It could be either party that'll turn around and take the lead. But neither party wants the third party to have a chance to be invited to the debates or whatever.
Whether they're vocal about it or not depends on if they think that party is going to take more votes away from them or your opposition.
Republicans won't complain
too much if they think that that new party candidate is going to take stuff from the Democrats. And likewise, the Democrats don't say anything. I mean, look at Ross Perot, when he ran. You know, the Democrats loved it. That guaranteed them a win.
Well, see, because that's the thing. So it's weird to me that, like, I understand why the Democrats would not oppose the Libertarians, you would think, because in general, currently, Libertarian Party is going to bleed off GOP. So they would say strategically, look, that's going to steal votes from the GOP automatically. We got no problem with the Libertarians showing up. Now, Green Party, logically, in your mind, you might say, they're going to bleed off of the Democrats. So the Republicans might say, hey, no problem. Let the Green Party in.
That's why the Democrats have fought so hard in this state to keep them off. But, I mean, they've lost. Deal with it.
Yeah. But that's the weird thing is in New York, the last time the Libertarian Party was allowed ballot access across the state, they got 107 Libertarian representatives in various offices. Now, some of them were, you know, just on the local level, you know, dog catcher, whatever.
Have they been able to keep that rate over time?
Well, that's the thing, is that they were, and then they went and got the signatures again, because every time you got to get a certain amount of signatures and show that you're significant enough, whatever. And then they decided to change the rules. And they changed the time period in which you're allowed to collect the signatures, which I found interesting because now in North Carolina, if you change it, you know, certain months to certain months, I don't think it affects people directly. It's not a big deal. But in New York, it is, because if you make it so that most of your collection time is during the winter in New York, in the whole state, you're going to have people that are not going to be willing at all to be standing out in front of a grocery store to collect signatures, A, and then B, nobody's going to want to stop to do it because you're dealing with snow and sleet and all this kind of crap, all right? So they narrowed it down so that they'd be collecting, you know, signatures in the winter, also, you know, kind of slows down your door-to-door sort of, you know, campaigning and canvassing too, right? So they did that, and then they also changed the rules. So, like I said, but the reason why I brought up Larry Sharp really was because one of his, you know, direct action plans, which he has a couple ideas, like turning around and basically putting product placement on the bridges and tunnels, where it's like, listen, we'll turn the Lincoln Tunnel into the, you know, the Amazon.com tunnel. We don't give a crap. They'll have to pay to help maintain these things. And that way we take it out of the taxpayer's responsibility to have to maintain it. And I, that just sounds intelligent to me, because if you have product placement, look, you're going to be involved in every traffic, you know, every time somebody reports the traffic. Well, now, here at the Amazon.com tunnel, you know, you have 2-hour delay. So you got constant.
Well, I can see the reasoning behind doing that, but, you know, North Carolina financed their IMAP program, which is an incident management something program, where they have, you know, the pickup trucks with the big arrows on top of them that cruise the interstates and help people that, you know, have a flat, run out of gas.
Right.
They'll perform traffic control when we have accidents and things like that. And now they've sold sponsorship on the trucks to, I believe, State Farm Insurance. So now you see these big red State Farm Insurance trucks / NCDOT running up and down the highways. And that's how they were able to get the program, maintain its viability and its income. Mm-hmm. Other than bleeding the budget, it's helping bring money in to sustain its own purpose. So, which is a good thing.
Well, but that's the thing, is if you turned around and you created a whole bunch of, like, you know, NASCAR style product placement all over stuff, well, yeah, it looks a little funky or whatever, but if it honestly
we're used to it. This is all the NASCAR. Well, we're used to seeing it all the time.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, listen, if you saw, you know, your you know, your works trucks coming out and they've got everything from, you know, the Skoll product placement to Mobil 1 oil, and it's just all in patches all over the truck, and that means that the taxpayers don't have to buy a new truck, because guess what? Those guys did. I don't object to the idea. You know?
Oh, no, not at all. I think it's a great idea. I think, and that's something that they've done in the budget in this state, is they have certified certain things to support certain things, like on our highways, we have a big wildflower program where they go to the interchanges and they plant, you know, a couple acres of daffodils or sunflowers and things like this. Mm-hmm. And it's expensive. I mean, if you've ever bought in bulk certain types of landscaping supplies, it's expensive as crap.
Right.
So what they've done, they designed a license plate for an extra 10 or 15 bucks. When you renew your tag, you can get a wildflower program tag, and all the money, all the profit off of making the tags goes towards that program, and it's a way for them to keep things like that alive. And right. It's paid off very well for the state.
Well, and that's the thing, is you can create a whole, you know, a whole system of this stuff if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, literally, like when they build a building, you know how they do the symbolic buy a brick kind of thing? Where for a small amount of money, even like say you or I could turn around and buy a brick for, you know, 30 bucks, 50 bucks, and our name goes on the brick.
Yeah.
I got no objection.
Amphitheaters picked up on that years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you go to the Blockbuster Pavilion, or you go to the Red Hat Amphitheater, or you go to the, you know, whichever, the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, and it has paid off well for these places.
Right. So, but part of the reason,
was it your football stadiums?
To bring it full circle, though, part of the reason why I brought up Larry Sharp was not really to discuss this, but it is a fair topic of discussion. Anything else could be, by the way, if you guys want to call in. 319-527-5016, if you're hearing us just after.
Well, I got to ask you.
Yeah.
You know, important election coming up, midterms down there. How are things faring in Georgia?
There's a whole story there. We can get into that. And I may have
well,
a guest.
Well, another topic. Did you see last night's performance by Comrade Joe and his – did you watch that?
Indeed,
I'll tell you what. Brings
indeed
back a lot of memories from the early 30s.
early 30s, you think?
Yeah.
You know what? I felt almost like it was Reagan era stuff I was listening to there from the politicians. You know, it reminded me of that when that's kind of what I used to hear constantly about, you know, the battle for the soul of America, the moral majority versus the other morality police on the other side. But like I was saying, if you're hearing us just after the half hour point here, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, we are live, so you can join in. 319-527-5016. I'm going to go to a break here, but before I do, the reason that I was talking about Larry Sharp is that he also brought up trying to keep people that retire, because this is a common thing that's like been my whole life. People retire in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania even, Massachusetts, all those states in the Northeast, a whole lot of them would eventually end up in Florida. They would take their retirement money, which they knew wasn't as much as they were making when they were working, and they could survive in Florida because the cost of living was lower, and Florida literally designed a good portion of its economy based on the fact that they had tons of retirement communities. Now, New Jersey tried to answer that by creating retirement communities and even trailer parks and stuff like this, making it more affordable and safer communities. If you're all surrounded by seniors, you're obviously not having, you know, your neighbors prey upon you as often as you might if you were living around a bunch of younger people, et cetera.
Absolutely, and you ain't got to worry about them coming on your lawn.
Well, they're not coming on your lawn. They're not speeding through your neighborhood. You got a little clubhouse. You know what I mean? It's like a thing. But the thing is that he was talking about the realistic problem where people work their whole lives in New York, say, and then they take their retirement money and they spend it in Florida. So he's saying let's create incentives to keep retirees here. And also create incentives to keep them from going into nursing homes, which the state winds up paying for and, you know, keeps families just kind of separating people from them and all this kind of thing. And he had ideas about that. And that was the interesting thing to me. But when you have a situation where a state becomes a repository for retirees, okay, is of a warmer climate than even the rest of the South, right? And sticks down into that, you know, subtropical area there, you know, like when you get into the Florida Keys, it's a completely different climate than it is, you know, even a little further north. You go into, I mean, Georgia's still part of that little odd piece of the climate there. You start moving north a little bit and you are into the rest of the South, which is different from this subtropical, you know, it's like tropical to subtropical, right? It's interesting. So I'm just saying, Florida, because it's a repository for that, and it's also a place for partying and, you know, spring break and Fort Lauderdale and all that good stuff, when you combine that with the influxes of, you know, the Cuban immigration, and again, its positioning on the map where it is, it's a confluence of really interesting people and alligators. So, you know, you put that together, you're going to get interesting results. Let's see how we can continue to get interesting results on this show. We'll take a short break here on the Friday Night Open Mic. 319-527-5016 if you're hearing us live. My co-host Pete is with me, and hopefully you'll join me, you listening. 319-527-5016. The Ocelli Effect continues after this.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Chuck Ocelli.com.
There's no money in it, so.
Yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And, you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but, quite frankly, I'm on that business model too, and, look, I'm not gonna complain, but I'm gonna complain. Okay, because people want to support you. They love you to death, but honestly.
So if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show. And I want you to do this too, because, you know, the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
About the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to The Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I've been all powerful people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
Second segment here on a Friday night, and so far, what have we talked about? Florida advertising, monetizing different things, like highways, etc. Why not? All that good stuff. What else did we discuss, BP, in the first segment?
Oh, lack of interest. What else? Funding for certain things by the states, party ballots. Well, that pretty much covers it.
Yeah. You know,
I'm looking for a story, something that came up. You know, we were talking in the room about Sandy Hook and the shows we did the last 2 weeks on it. I'm trying to find an article that I read that I thought maybe you had come across about the number of times the FBI had prior contact with people involved in these mass shootings. And it was some phenomenal number that really surprised me. And I cannot find it. I wonder if somebody pulled it. Well, I'll have to keep looking.
Well, I've seen that mentioned, right, by a lot of people who are running up to their big suspicions about certain things, you know. And I do mean it goes kind of wide, because there's authors like The Singulars, who did the whole, like, book on the Batman shooting kid. I forget his name, but he was pretty... pretty weird. The kid who shot up the theater during the first weekend, I think Batman was out, the Dark Knight was out, right, in Colorado.
Yeah.
And they did a whole book on that. And it's like, you know, are people being brainwashed, or are they part of, you know, some sort of MK Ultra program and stuff like that? And a lot of those.
Yeah, that guy was James Holmes.
Yeah, Holmes, right. Yeah, his name, it just was eluding me, but. And I can see his face, because his face was rather curious. That mugshot is pretty unique. The sort of, you know, odd vacant
look.
Yeah,
I thought I thought they busted Carrot Top for something else.
Yeah, or, you know, like, this is what, who was it that got busted eating a, I don't know, was drunk as hell eating a hamburger somewhere? And, like, you know, he's got hamburger all over his face and he's all disheveled. Some Hollywood guy. But, I mean, it looks like one of those shots where it's like, you know, help us out here. This guy does not look like he was ready for a publicity photo. And now, you know.
Yeah, what do you have, the red dyed hair or something? And he looked a little used and abused in his mugshot.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, but who looks good in a mugshot?
That was back in 2012. Good Lord, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's been a while. Remember when Pee Wee Herman got busted, right? His mugshot.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Paul Rubens' mugshot. Poor Pee-wee. You know, and it's so strange to me, too, because the whole thing, here's my suspicious mind, right? A guy is busted because he's doing that in a porno theater. Now, I know this sounds strange in the pre-internet era, though, but people used to actually go to little theaters and watch pornography on a big screen. I know it sounds crazy, but people used to do it. And there were all different sizes of these theaters, right? Some of them were just in storefronts and not that big. People would engage with taking care of business while viewing said pornography on the big screen. Okay, this is, I know it sounds weird, but BP, you can back me up. This is something that used to happen, right?
I mean, oh, yeah, quite frequently. In fact, I mean, still, some theaters, it's been known that that's where you go, and then every now and then the guy shows up with his wife or girlfriend that decides to make their own movie within the theater. So, yeah, weird stuff happens.
Oh, but that's always been a thing, and it doesn't matter if you're watching, you know, the latest rom-com or could be any movie. Could be Transformers. And, yeah, just people decide in a dark, semi-dark place, whatever, to get a little crazy. You know, you turn the lights out and people, well, you know.
Have you heard the recent thing, though, about Major League Baseball? They have busted, what is it, 3 couples in the past week for having sex in the stadiums during the games?
No,
I wonder if it's a new TikTok challenge or something.
See, that could be. Are they doing it in the seats, or are they going, like, in the tunnels? Or
well, I mean, they're different places, but, see, there was one. I forget where the first one was. Then there was one at the Diamondbacks. And then Toronto Blue Jays ejected a couple for having sex in the stands. It's
weird.
Crazy.
Wow. See, you would think in the surveillance age we live, that, you know, look, if this was the 1990s and people were trying to do this, okay, they want to do the risk-taking thing and have fun in public and all that, and you'd say, well, okay, I kind of understand. It's a thrill. You're taking risks here, and what happens? You get busted. You pay a fine. Okay. Not so big. You know, just like teenagers in cars, right, doing their thing like they used to. I wonder if that even happens anymore. Nowadays... Yeah, but nowadays, I don't expect blind spots to be anywhere in the surveillance grid. So, in a public place, you would expect that there were places where there wouldn't be monitoring, say, 30 years ago. You know, pre-9/11, okay, let's just say. You might say to yourself, well, they might have, security cameras at stores that get robbed, or maybe in the big department stores or the mall, they got security cameras. You expect it there. And you would expect that a lot of cameras are available. I mean, especially at a major league stadium, they're filming the game.
You would think.
Duh.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not only filming the game, but they got guys walking around shooting things that they're going to put up on the Jumbotron, right? And all, so you would expect lots of cameras. And... everybody's got a camera in their pocket nowadays, which wasn't necessarily true in the 90s. You know, you didn't have everybody with a cell phone, automatically you got a camera. you know, you had to carry around a big bulky thing, right? I mean, they started making them smaller, but God, remember when video cameras were like, I don't know, what would they be the size of now?
Like a TV camera, you know, the size of a microwave.
Yeah, like the size of a microwave that you carried around on your shoulder. I mean, it was sort of noticeable. Nowadays, you know, you could literally have a body cam on or a GoPro, right? Something like, I mean, there are all sorts of different levels of how you could be recorded, and potentially you have to be of the mindset that if you're in public somewhere, you're very likely being surveilled by something that is recording you. So,
well, if you think about it, you know, a lot of today's news comes from people who just automatically whip out their camera when something happens. I mean, look at the news stories that have been generated based off of witness filming. George Floyd.
Well, yeah.
I mean, look at what went on there. You know, with things that we would never have known about had somebody not whipped out a phone and started filming.
Right. But then again, if you got to rewind to pre-9/11 time, that's why the Rodney King video was so shocking, because usually people didn't have a camcorder handy. It just so happened.
Yeah, that guy was across the street in an apartment, wasn't he?
Something like that. But see, that happened in a lot of cases where, again, once the video cameras got cheaper, because those things used to be expensive. I mean, you paid like a grand for, you know, the big bulky video camera, right? And, the batteries sucked all the time. Half the time they didn't have more than, say, 20 minutes worth of a charge. So, you know. You might be able to film 2 hours worth of tape, but you got to have, you know, four batteries with you to get it done. If you're going to walk around with the thing, and you have to have a blank tape, et cetera, et cetera. So, it used to be a lot harder. Nowadays, you know, you store 20 hours worth of crap on your phone. No problem. But yeah, there were incidents there. And I mean, even, think back to 9/11 itself. There's a handful of people with camcorders in different places who were filming different things for different reasons. But if it happened today with the cell phones, we'd probably have 150 angles, you know, as opposed to the, you know, 7-8. Okay. We got, only one actually capturing the first plane and all that. I mean, imagine how many different angles we'd probably have with people's cell phones. With the building collapse.
Well, yeah, true. You know what surprises me, though, is how many different angles are out there that we never hear about. I mean, that's like in the UK. They say that the state government's cameras can track you from one side of London all the way through that town to the other side when you exit.
Yeah.
They have that many security cameras up.
Well, and we're gradually getting there, because a lot of towns now have red light cameras. And again, if you combine it with the different businesses along like a main drag or whatever. See, but that's what I'm saying, is that it's only increased. I mean, if you even went back to the 90s in a professional baseball stadium, right, you would still say to yourself, well, there's probably 10 cameras all around this stadium filming the whole time anybody's here, from batting practice all the way to people leaving. Right? I mean, even the shots where they're doing the post-game show, a lot of times you see people exiting the stadium and all that. The game's over. You'll actually see people gathered around the dugout trying to get his signatures after the game. All that, right? But that's in the 90s, 10 cameras. But now today, like I said, potentially there's 10,000 cameras, because let's just say, you know, how many people does one of those stadiums hold anymore? They're all different sizes, but conservatively, what are you looking at? 20,000 people in a stadium?
Well, at least.
So if half of them have, you know, cell phones on them, you got 10,000 potential cameras, plus the professionals. Okay. Plus, in some cases, you have, news outlets who are not necessarily just going to get it from Major League Baseball could potentially have their own cameras there, depending on if there's a celebrity there, if there's a significant event, if the game is very important.
Yeah, I mean, and 20,000 is like, you know, just is less than half capacity of most of these major coliseums. Yankee Stadium will hold 54,000. Dodger Stadium will hold 56,000. I mean, that's a lot of cameras.
Well, yeah, and again, I'm going with the idea that half or less than half of the people have them. So if you got a sold out game, and you got, let's just go with the flat 50,000, then the potential is there for 20,000 cameras easily. Cause that's less than half.
Oh, yeah.
Of the people in there maybe have a cell phone. I mean, if you can afford to go to a Yankee game, I'm sure you can afford a cell phone bill. And, you know, so you cause it's expensive going to the damn games. That was the thing that killed me is even with the discount when they, opened Citi Field, like the first years, they had Citi Field open for the Mets in New York. It was like, well, let's see, maybe I can get a discount because they give discounts, by the way, to people who are legally blind, to go to sporting events and stuff sometimes because, well, visually, we don't necessarily get the same thing that the rest of you get. You know, if I'm in the nosebleeds, I'm probably guessing at what's going on at the field, right? Even though I'm there. So, you know, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in concerts where if it wasn't for the Jumbotron, you couldn't tell me that that's who was on stage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could easily put on an impersonator, and if they were good enough, you wouldn't know the difference because you can't see him.
No, you.
Okay, so, yeah. but of course, for somebody who's like blind or legally blind, well, that gets worse. So they used to offer discounts to try and encourage you to go. So I go to try and get a discount, and I looked into getting, you know, tickets for two, because obviously I need a ride. So I'm going to get a ticket for the person giving me a ride to go to, you know, to go to Citi Field, it's called, right? And it was like, yeah, so my lowest cost was something like, I don't know, $225, okay, to be able, and that's before taxes, to get tickets. That's with a discount. And I'm like, How the hell does anybody go to these games? Because I know I'm going to need at least $100 to have a couple of drinks, maybe, and I don't know, a hot dog or something. So that's going to be like $100. You know, God help me if I wanted to buy a piece of memorabilia. I'm going to overpay for that.
Well, that's one of the things that almost killed NASCAR. You know, the big push on TV was. Used to, you'd see the Daytona 500. You know, you'd see that every year on CBS. And then they started, the networks started carrying more of the races and then eventually started carrying the full season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then NASCAR got greedy. They started closing the small local tracks like North Wilkesboro and moving to the big tracks in Colorado and California and the super speedways.
Mm-hmm.
And then ticket prices went through the roof and it about killed the sport. You know, used to, you could take a family of four to a NASCAR event and it not kill your budget for the month. Today, it's almost impossible to do. It has gotten so expensive. I really don't see, I mean, I know sports is a big release for a lot of people. You know, they live and die by their team, but I don't understand how prices can get so high and people can still afford to do it. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Not me either.
You're looking $200 for any kind of adventure per person.
Yeah.
From baseball to NASCAR to basketball, you name it. It's going to cost you a fortune even for nosebleed seats.
Right. I mean, and that's the funny thing is, again, like I said, I was looking for the, you know, blind person discount and trying to go for two people. And then also there's the consideration to travel. It's going to cost some money. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to try to go to the Met game with somebody. And this is easily 10 years ago. That I was looking into doing this, if not 15. I gotta look into when Citi Field opened, but either way, when they first opened, I was looking to go and it was just ridiculous. I was like saying to myself, if I don't have $500, then I might as well not try to go. I mean, between the tickets and yeah, crazy. You know. That's why buying season tickets for a minor league team would have cost me way less than going to the major leagues for one game. You know? So, I don't know. Anyways, we do have a caller, and we've got about, say, 10 more minutes before I'm going to take another break. I do want to hear more about this. I mean, there's a trend now with people getting busted having sex at the Major League Baseball stadiums.
Well, that's... three in a week, I wouldn't call it a trend, but, you know, it's a pretty big coincidence.
Mm. See, now, usually when you see a story like that, it's a crackdown because they've taken note that maybe they, you know, let a couple of people, other people slip through their fingers already, right? And now they've decided to respond and start busting them, like, you know, they let certain things go. Like sometimes there's even like fights in the stands. I don't know if you've experienced this, but you know, remember I lived in Jersey, so you go to Philly and fights in the stands, kind of commonplace. I mean, is it Philly or is it Boston where they literally have the jail in the I think it's Philly where they have jails in the stadiums. Like temporary holding
stands. Yeah, most of them are. Most of these newer stadiums have those automatically when they build them in. But yeah, Philly, I think doesn't Yankee Stadium have it as well?
I don't know about the new Yankee Stadium, but I'm pretty sure it was Philly that was one of the places. I do know that you go to see the Phillies, literally the Philadelphia Phillies. You could expect to see some fights in the stands, and. Security, I'm not saying they would let it go on, but I am saying that a fist fight at any concert in the tri-state area would cause an ejection and a reaction from security. But at, Veterans Stadium? Not necessarily. I mean, you know, if it only went a couple of minutes, maybe they didn't even really respond. You know what I mean? Like if it was a long thing or the brawl really started to spread around a section, then you might get, you know, but if it's just two guys decide to beat the crap out of each other for 2-3 minutes, it seemed to me like, let them go. Okay, I'm just saying. And God help you if you show up at Veterans Stadium. I think it's not Veterans Stadium anymore. It's another one. But it used to be a lot cheaper to go see the Phillies, though, if I wanted to see the Mets. Because you could go there, and I could wait for when the Mets were playing the Phillies. And I could see the Mets play at Veterans Stadium. But if you went in there wearing your Mets stuff, you might become a target for somebody who's angry, especially if the Phillies are losing. So, which, thankfully, the Mets sucked, so I could get away with wearing a Mets hat. They really weren't looking
to pick
a fight.
Yeah, so much for the, what is it, what's their motto, the City of Brotherly Love?
Yeah, well, the City of Brotherly Love, or I'll beat the crap out of you if you...
Pretty much, yeah. Philly has a reputation.
It's true. It's a truth. I really think that's why there was never a big push to get New Jersey, you know, a lot of professional teams. I mean, yes, I know they had the Devils, and for a little while, they even put an NJ on the Giants helmet temporarily, if I remember right, because the Giants and the Jets both played in New Jersey, even though they were called the New York Giants and New York Jets still. But, you know, like, we never had a baseball team, not a major league one.
Now, why is that? Why do they play in Jersey?
Well, because the deal...
It's the Meadowlands, isn't it? Don't they both play the Meadowlands?
They did. I don't know what they're doing today. But at one point, yeah, the Jets and the Giants both played at Giants Stadium, which was at the Meadowlands.
Giants Stadium, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was in New Jersey. But they would always say, you know, welcome to, you know, New York. And I'd go, yeah, it's in Jersey. Which is a funny thing because even musicians who would go and play the Garden State Arts Center, which later became the PNC Bank Arts Center, which was a thing in Homedale, New Jersey, a lot of those rock musicians would be like, hello, New York. And the whole crowd would pretty much almost always yell back at them, no, New Jersey, a-hole. But, yeah, you're in the wrong state. But they would just call it New York. I don't know. Anyway, I don't even know what I'm talking about here. We got a couple of minutes left before we go to break, and we do have a caller, so I'm going to get him started on the conversation and see what he wants to bring in. It is the legendary Jimmy James, and how's your throat doing, man?
Oh, it's doing real good.
Ah, okay. Well, you sound a little stronger right off the bat.
Oh, I'm doing really good.
All right. So what's on your mind tonight, man?
Oh, I was listening to your baseball discussion. What about the Rangers?
Oh, Texas Rangers. What about them?
No, it's no Texas Rangers anymore. They went to...
Sorry, what?
They were the New York Rangers.
No, New York Rangers is a hockey team. Texas Rangers is something else.
Well, no, that's what he said. He said, what about hockey? And then he said, the Rangers.
Oh, okay. Well, no, the Texas Rangers have a different lineage from the New York Rangers.
Yeah, the Rangers baseball long gone moved to, Tennessee? No, where? Yeah. Tennessee. Anyway, Rangers, don't they play at the Garden?
Well, the New York Rangers hockey team, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I'm pretty sure they were one of the original NHL teams, the New York Rangers, but I'd have to double check that.
Where do the Islanders play?
Long Island.
Okay.
That's why they're the Islanders, see?
Oh, bite me.
Yeah, just saying, you know. And then you got the New Jersey Devils, which actually played in Jersey and played at the Meadowlands also. But see, they played at the indoor arena, which is on the same complex as, say, Giant Stadium, but that's the indoor. The Meadowlands Arena, which when I was a kid was called the Brendan Byrne Arena, believe it or not. So,
if you ever read, like, the Wikipedia names of, like, the New York teams, like 150 years ago. That's one of them.
Well, there was
sound crazy. Never heard of them.
Well, there was a bunch of interesting teams in the Northeast. You know, Newark had teams. Hackensack had teams. You know, in Jersey. I'm just going to go.
Yeah, crazy name.
The Texas Rangers, I'm thinking, were originally a team somewhere else that they moved them to Texas, didn't they?
The Rangers?
Yeah.
No, the Rangers, Texas, the Rangers, let's see.
Because
it's the Astros I'm thinking of that moved. The Rangers.
Oh yeah, no, the Astros moved and became, yeah. But, no, that's the weird thing. There was a couple of teams that existed in baseball, like the Seattle Pilots. And, I'm trying to think, these are major league teams, by the way, that just sort of, like, no longer exist, like the Montreal Expos, right?
Yeah.
Senators. What about the Senators?
Yeah, the Washington Senators. They were moved.
They sold that team. Oh, let's see. Oh, no, I'm still looking at Rangers. Rangers came along in 61. They were the Senators and moved to Texas.
That's where the Senators went, to Texas. Okay.
Yeah. Because the Nationals now, that was, who was, that was the Expos, wasn't it? That they moved to D.C. and become the Nationals.
I don't know. I got to look that up. I'm right now trying to look up the Seattle Pilots because I remember I had baseball cards from the 60s that I collected just a bulk amount at one point. And I got all these cards for the Seattle Pilots and I'm going, the hell is that? But.
They had one, was it 1 year? Was it 69? Yeah, they existed for 1 year in the major leagues.
Wow, you think those cards?
They moved, they became the Milwaukee Brewers.
Right.
Well, wait a minute. I thought the Brewers, wait a minute.
Yeah, 69, I got it here. It says Seattle. It says, the Seattle Pilots were an American professional baseball team based in Seattle, Washington during the 1969 Major League Baseball season. During their single season existence, the Pilots played their home games at Six Stadium and were a member of the West Division of the Major League Baseball's American League. On April 1st, 1970, the franchise moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin and became the Milwaukee Brewers.
There you have it. See, in Milwaukee at one time, had the Braves. They weren't always in Atlanta. So, you
moved
know,
to Atlanta.
Yeah, some of these teams have moved around. Like the Mets, I know, came into existence in 1962. And the reason why they were brought into existence effectively was to replace the fact that the Dodgers had moved to L.A. And the Giants had moved to San Francisco. So what they did is they took Dodger blue and the orange NY from the Giants hats, and they combined it into the Mets logo, and that's how you had the blue, you know, the Dodger blue background with the orange NY, and that became your New York Mets. Started in 62.
What about the Excelsiors?
Excelsiors. Way back. I don't know about the Excelsiors.
Yeah.
The Excelsiors?
I wouldn't doubt it. There's been a couple of different, you know, I'm always surprised that the Toronto Blue Jays continue to exist.
Don't be talking bad about the Blue Jays.
Well, you know, I'm just saying it's kind of weird that you got, you know, the American Baseball League basically with one team in Canada, you know, now.
Well, yeah, but you had a National League team in Montreal at one time.
Yeah, but they had so little
and
interest.
And they've been able to thrive. The Blue Jays, believe it or not, the Blue Jays, for as long as they've been around, they were an expansion team, 76, I think it was. They have a program in Major League Baseball through the minor league system that's one of the best in being able to move talent through the system. They really have done well. I've always pulled for Toronto. They were the sponsor team. We were a farm team of theirs when I got involved in baseball.
Right.
And I have a lot of respect for Toronto. Plus, it gives me somebody to pull against the Yankees. I can't stand the Yankees.
Listen, always good to root against the Yankees no matter who you're rooting for.
But they're back-to-back World Series champs. So, hey, they know what they're doing.
No, I got no problem with the organization. My problem is with its location. I don't understand how they survived because, again, Montreal, who had some very interesting players and runs over the years.
Well, you got to realize, though, Montreal is in the French part of Canada. You know, they're very Eurocentric, where Toronto is a very Americanized city.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Right across the bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really close.
Yeah, Montreal's not that far off the border, though, right? I mean, if I remember. No. I mean,
well, a little further north than east.
Still, they're French.
No,
well, Montreal, I mean, they're in the French speaking section of Canada. They're very Eurocentric, where Toronto is a modern, I guess you could say, Americanized city. Well, it's one of the cleanest cities in the world. Got to give them that.
No, fair enough. Look, Toronto's a great place and all. It's just I find it weird that it's the one Canadian city that's able to sustain a Major League Baseball team. And, you know, it used to be the great American pastime.
True. But you do have a lot of American expats living there too, so.
Well, yeah, but then why not more? You know, I mean, they managed to field the whole Canadian Football League for a while. You know what I mean? American football, by the way. So, I don't know. It's just weird to me that's it and that the Montreal Expos failed. I used to like the Expos, honestly. Andre Dawson and, Tim Raines and those guys, like that era of the Expos, I liked them. It kind of sucks when they play on that artificial turf and all that, but, and they wind up becoming the Washington Nationals, which is a funky sort of thing, because as we just talked about the Seattle, I mean, when we were talking about the teams moving around, the Rangers were the Washington Senators. They were a significant team at one point, and a long-standing team in the major leagues, actually, the Senators. But anyways, this is a weird discussion, and you never know what'll come up. And we'll give Jimmy James a whole opportunity to come up with his whatever he wants in the next segment. And you could join us, too. 319-527-5016. The Ocelli Effect continues after this.
like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools.
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War.
By author Mike Swanson.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Chili.com.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Air Strikes and Tanks, Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That is never gonna happen. That never did.
It never did, did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
It's fools?
I can't say more.
We better not say and be polite, but there are no false promises at the Ocelli.com radio network.
Look, that's exactly it. Not. It's truth, the point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ocelli.
Ocelli.com.
Listen now.
Listen now.
I want them to appreciate the incredible job we're doing. We are doing a job the likes of which has never been done before. You're going to have mental depression for people. You're going to have large numbers of suicides. Take a look at what happens in a really horrible recession or worse. So you're going to have tremendous suicides, but you know what you're going to have more than anything else? Drug addiction. You will see drugs being used like nobody's ever used them before. And people are going to be dying all over the place from drug addiction. I want them to appreciate the incredible job we're doing. We are doing a job the likes of which has never been done before. I want them to appreciate the incredible...
Ocelli.com. Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Final segment of the open lines here on Friday night. The open mic on Ocelli.com. The Ocelli Effect. My co-host B. Pete is with me so far. Only one caller. But if you're hearing us at about, 20 after 9 on the second day of August, 2022... Okay, then we are live and you can call in. Any other time, we are a recording and sorry you missed us. 319-527-5016. Any topic, any, discussion you want, cause we've got some time left to play with, about, say 42 more minutes at most. And I'm not sure if the age of transitions will begin at 10 p.m. or not. We shall soon see, I guess, in about 42 minutes. So, B. Pete, we were going through a couple of things. I'm not sure if we gave Jimmy a fair chance to bring up what he wanted to get things rolling. He said he was listening to the baseball discussion. We tailed on and started thinking out loud about the different teams moving around and all that. But, three busts, though, in the past week of people having sex in public and choosing to do so at the Major League games. It costs you more to go to a major league game than it does to a hotel room, though. So, I don't know why. All right, anyway, whatever. People are going to be people. I guess social distancing is not part of the equation at the major league games anymore, I guess. All right, anyway, B. Pete, anything else on your mind, or should we see if Jimmy James has something else on his?
No, let's check with Jimmy, see what he's got going on.
There you go. Jimmy, anything else you got on your mind before we move into who knows what next?
I don't know. I didn't really call in with a purpose.
Fair enough.
Was it on your show this week? I heard a bunch of stuff about LBJ.
No, I wasn't discussing LBJ this week.
Who was that? Something about LBJ this week.
Something new on LBJ, or?
Must be, because he's sticking in my head.
Huh.
That usually only happens when something new comes out about that crazy old fart.
Well, you never know. LBJ, interesting character in history. And certainly corrupt as hell, as far as I'm concerned. But, interesting. I don't know. I could have discussed Vietnam briefly, because I often will trail off into stuff like that. But I don't remember discussing LBJ personally this week. Maybe last week with Mike, I might have discussed LBJ a little bit. But that would be last week.
Huh. Yeah, old LBJ.
Yep. The guy that some people think is the mastermind behind the Kennedy assassination, yes. Which I don't agree with, but what can you say? It is interesting, though, that, you know, his ties to the oil people and obvious corruption and scandals that were about to come out, whether it's insurance or cotton allotments or possibly murder, a lot of different things.
The only thing that I give any credence to that interests me about that crap is that guy that worked for the state that was murdered. Right? Remember?
Oh, yeah. The guy that they found him near his truck out on his property and ruled it a suicide, even though he somehow shot himself with a bolt-action rifle a couple of times, that guy?
Yeah, I think they had it. It's been read. I think they acknowledged it's murder. Because people are like, yeah, you can't shoot yourself behind the head like that.
Gary Webb supposedly did it.
Well, Gary Webb supposedly shot himself in the head twice, which is a pretty rare thing to do. Look, and I do see some problems there, and could somebody have had that guy killed? Well, anytime you start to challenge people and, their, you know, underhanded way of making money, you risk your life.
That one where they claim LBJ says, well, get rid of, that one, I tend to believe more. Rest of it, yeah, a bunch of crap.
Well, you know, and the problem was that Barr McClellan, you know, who really spearheaded a lot of that stuff, I mean, there was a lot of not much there in his book, if you read it.
Well, no, there was a lot of stuff there, but he never would come out and pin it on someone. He would not say, so-and-so definitely told me such-and-such. He would provide the innuendo, but never the attachment. That was his thing about LBJ, you know, his last statements, you know, towards the end of his life, you know, made me feel like, yeah, he was responsible. The book, I don't know, I got the book on the shelf. It's a decent read, but he just doesn't go that extra step to say, here's the definitive proof.
Well, and that's the thing, though, because he doesn't have definitive proof. What he's got is, well, this
guy. That's
all
supposition.
Yeah, he says, well, this guy who worked for LBJ told me this, you know. And I worked with the lawyers, so I knew this lawyer. And, yes, we needed a psychiatrist to come in because the guy was losing his mind toward the end of his life. And, okay, you know, there's something to all that, but does it actually hang? Proof of him being involved in the assassination on him. And that's
well,
where
you
there's
know,
no connection.
Always, you go back to that old premise. Like who had the most? Who was going to benefit the most out of the situation? Well, LBJ benefited the most out of the Kennedy assassination. Mm-hmm. But is that enough? I mean, personally, I've been on the fence on LBJ. I think that he's the one that benefited the most. Was he just a lucky recipient of somebody else's actions? I don't know.
Well, and there you have it.
Yes.
And it's Henry Marshall was the official you were trying to think of. It just came to my mind. Jimmy James. Henry Marshall. Yeah. That was the guy that, yeah, they found him dead. He went out at some point and he was just dead next to his truck. And they said it looked like his head had been bashed into the truck and all this kind of stuff.
Wasn't he the USDA guy?
He was some kind of inspector.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He was like, in Michigan, we got the Department of Natural Resources. I don't know what they would call
yeah.
it in Texas. But.
He had to deal with the, cotton allotments or something?
Yeah, this was the thing where there were like supplemental payments going to people who were allegedly being paid to either grow cotton or not grow cotton or something. And the land, you know, had to be eligible to be farmed one way or another. And apparently, you know, they were issuing these, these things from the government, for land that you couldn't possibly grow anything on. I mean, unless you were going to install rice paddies, because this stuff was literally like swampland. It wasn't farmland. And, he was going to, well, make trouble about it. And there's always scams like that, you know. Yeah, pay us to not grow corn on, you know, something that's already been paved over. And if nobody looks, then nobody knows. You know, this kind of thing. And that's what I think Marshall.
Yeah, but people don't normally get killed over stuff like that, though.
Yeah, but it's...
I mean, this guy, geez.
Well, but here's the thing, is if what the guy was learning or what he was wanting to blow the whistle on was one corrupt politician and maybe, you know, a trickle of income going to some other big business guy and, you know, and they're splitting up the money or whatever, not a big deal. But if you're going to uncover something that maybe has, you know, many partners and many millions of dollars, well, at a certain point, you know, what's more cost effective? You know, should I lose this or have to go through the legal battle to deal with this? Or if I eliminate the witness and pay to get that done, which one, you know, cost benefit analysis, right? As somebody who's a scammer and a criminal.
Didn't they actually charge, Billy Celestis and all them? So it didn't really do them any good.
Yeah, but Celestis is involved in a whole bunch of stuff because he was a multi-level con artist. So Celestis getting charged with, you know, and that's admitted even by Celestis, right? So.
Yeah, he was a sure and honest crook.
Well,
sometimes.
I don't know how to put that, but the thing is that, you know, the guy was a con artist. It was simple. And okay, fair enough.
He lost money.
Well, yeah, okay. But what I'm saying is, I don't know if. Yeah,
that deal where he ripped off FDR was genius.
Okay, but the point is that because Celestis is involved in all this stuff, it does. I don't remember if he was involved in the cotton allotments issue.
He helped facilitate it, I think, didn't he?
Well, I don't know if that was him or if that was Bobby Baker's job. You know, because Bobby Baker
did get his hands dirty. The fat dude there, the liar, actually took these people and kept showing them the same grain, moved to different places. So it's him that's going to go down, and whoever he would have mentioned, I guess.
Yeah, but Baker facilitated a bunch of different things, at least financially. Now, I don't know how dirty Baker's hands ever got, but
that whole crowd was dirty. That whole little cabal. I mean, Johnson had a good organization around him.
Yeah.
Bobby Baker used to do the payoffs at Congress.
Yeah, no, that's something we know for sure, but because you're doing that, you got to know who's getting paid and why, usually, unless you're just a straight-out bag man who knows nothing and you're just delivering, you know, brown paper bags, all right? So Baker's an interesting piece of connective tissue because he's probably connected to all sorts of stuff here that at the end of the day does have to involve some payoffs to Congress people or whoever else who are in on it, right? Because, you know, look, we're going to monetize this in your state, and we'll turn it back around and this and that. And, of course, Johnson had good relationships with a whole bunch of them for his time in Congress. So,
yeah, but the funny thing is that until he became president and started sending home the bacon, Texans didn't even really like LBJ.
But it depended on what part of Texas. Because, you know, in some places he was kind of a hero because he brought electricity.
Well, you had a split. Yeah, you had a split in the Democratic faction in Texas. Texas Democrats were a fractured party. You had two sides for years, just trying to underhand each other to see who could climb to the pile of the top, top of the pile the quickest.
And make no mistake, to some people in Texas, Johnson was a hero because he had gotten them, you know, not only the guys who were involved in dirty business that he made happy, but there were some people in the general public that were happy. Like I said, he brought electricity to certain areas or facilitated electricity to be brought to, you know, some underprivileged areas that wouldn't have gotten it otherwise. He was part of that.
That's so people could have a radio and listen to all of his radio stations in the area.
Well, there's the other thing is that, you know, he definitely, and him and his wife on paper, had control of a lot of media, which did employ a bunch of people. I don't think those people hated him so much. You know, if they
were employed. Well, back then, you know, radio was much bigger than TV.
Yeah.
And, I mean, radio was the medium, that and the newspapers. And when you're rural Texas, everybody had a radio. That's how you got the message across. Johnson had for being crooked, he had a pretty good organization going.
Oh, yeah. But that's what I'm saying, though, is that there's a lot of different ways that you can look at this. And, you know, even though, again, he's not, with hindsight and knowing what you know now, and looking at it from the outside, you know, we can all go, well, the guy was a scumbag, sure. But again, if you were on a local level in Texas, and this guy was, you know, bringing electricity, was bringing electricity to your community, or had somehow facilitated something that, well, looks like it's benefiting the community, but really it's benefiting the, you know, the local oil man. But the local oil man says, well, Johnson made it so I could, you know, give you guys jobs. Or so I could contribute to building this, community center or whatever else. There was a whole bunch of things like that going on. So he did buy goodwill with a lot of Texans. What's that?
One thing about Johnson is that he passed Kennedy's agenda. I mean, through in memorial of Kennedy. I mean, he pushed it through.
Yeah, well,
that's Congress, that Senate.
Yeah.
Nobody else in the world has done that, not even Kennedy.
No, absolutely true, but that's after Kennedy's death. I'm talking about just what he established in Texas to begin with. He wasn't hated.
Yeah, I don't recall early on. He did random acts of good things.
Right.
During World War II, back when FDR was turning away Jews, he got 500 Jews sent to Texas, saved their lives from Europe. I mean, he was capable of great.
Well, no, I don't think it was so much. No, I think he was an opportunist that took advantage of the situations only because it benefited him.
Yeah, Johnson I would agree with that.
Johnson was looking out for Johnson.
Well, right. He wasn't looking
Johnson's to. Because Johnson's money was tied to his wife. And he knew that with that, he had to go out there and do something on his own. He didn't do anything unless it benefited him. That's Johnson to a T.
Yeah, well, but and if that motivation provides some good acts, because goodwill is something that is, attractive to purchase as a politician, right? Then,
That's like the whole Civil Rights Act. That was nothing more than Johnson looking for votes.
Yeah,
and he figured now's the time to do it.
Right. I don't think he was entirely. I mean, look, I'm not trying to say that I know the man's heart and soul, but.
No, let's be fair to Johnson. Johnson passed that stuff after the election. And to be clear, his own Southern Conference had no use for him after that.
Yeah.
I mean, Russell was done with him.
Well, Johnson said it himself. He said these, you know, and not all glowing terms that, you know, these individuals will be voting Democrat the rest of their life. He knew what the outcome of the Civil Rights Act was. It wasn't for civil rights.
I know.
Well, Johnson was a racist to the bone.
Well, look, we could argue about this all we want, but
I disagree on that.
Fine.
Did you listen to his last interview with Walter Cronkite, where he explained that through the years, you know, all the way to the president, he took his responsibility for all people, as he put it, and he said, I know I didn't do right when I was younger, and I tried to make up for it with these civil rights things.
Okay.
Well, and he admitted that he changed his mind through the years.
Right. But the thing is, look, again, when you're talking about he's sitting down for an interview with Cronkite, one of his last interviews, you're trying to establish a legacy, and legacy was something that was important to him. So either way, whether you know it's legitimate in his heart or not, it's kind of irrelevant because it's what he accomplished versus what he didn't accomplish, right? So there was a bunch of things that were positive that he accomplished, whether it was for selfish means or he legitimately thought that he needed to balance the universe based on his past, you know, poor actions or whatever.
Wait a minute
else.
Now. Let's look at his major accomplishment, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Those things weren't passed by Democrats in Congress. Those things were passed by a higher majority of Republicans voting for them.
Okay. Fair
Johnson
enough.
Johnson actually crossed the line on that one.
Well, yeah, but he did. Okay. Fair enough. This is what I'm saying, though. Look, it doesn't mean that we can adequately withdraw from that or glean from that exactly what was in his heart. We could take his public statements and all that, and you know that a politician's going to make public statements for different reasons, and they always do. It's just like people that trying to, you know, sort of put a sainthood onto a JFK, which I object to.
I've never understood that one.
Never understood that at all. I'm not saying that the man was a saint, and I'm not saying that he was, just as corrupt as anybody else. All I'm saying is that we don't necessarily know what the truth is inside of somebody's head because you never do. You can take a look at their actions.
Hey, I learned a long time ago, never trust a guy that cheats on his wife.
Well, okay. And you can you can go in that direction. But then again, I would say, the only reason why you can't, look, if you don't find that a guy's cheating on his wife when he's in a position of power and it's all coming at him, then he's probably even more dangerous because he's been able to cover it up well. Just because you haven't busted him doesn't mean he didn't do it.
Well, just because you haven't busted him doesn't mean he is doing it. He just haven't busted him.
Right. That's what I was saying. So I just didn't put it well. But, so look, Johnson's an interesting figure because at all times you could find all sorts of criminal activity, but you can find positive results from some of his efforts, which were not always immediately politically correct or expedient for him personally. Like you said, he had to cross the line when it came to the Civil Rights Act. You know, the Southern Democrats at the time, not really in favor of it. Okay.
They weren't. It was amazing how that came about, but a lot of people don't realize that. You know, they think, oh, the Democrats, yeah, Civil Rights Act. No, Democrats were against it. Go look at the vote.
No, and some of them, it's not even necessarily that they were even all absolutely racist, although a lot of them were. But some of them just didn't want to make more trouble than they already had. You know, there was enough upheaval. We don't want to make it worse. So let's not deal with this. I mean, there was that line of thinking,
too. Well, let me
ask
you something. And this, both you and Jimmy, let me ask you. Do you think politics today are any different than they were back in the 60s when we didn't have 24/7 cable coverage of everything that goes on and attempts to make stories out of things that were nothing? I mean, do you think politics has really changed since then?
Well, I'll let Jimmy answer first, but go ahead, Jimmy.
Yes, I think it's much, much worse. In fact, I know it is.
Well, but what part of it? The politics or just the rhetoric causing the division that we see now? And take into consideration that, you know, it doesn't take much for a story to go viral and affect the conversation that's taking place day to day. So, I mean, are the politics different or is the way it's being covered different and we're just reacting differently because now we've got our, you know, the camel's noses under the tent 24/7?
I think it's a combination of all of those things being true now.
Well, see,
I'd have to agree with you.
I have a slightly different view on this, and I got to tell you why. Because plainly and objectively trying to read the rhetoric of that time period, no, I think things were actually more extreme then. It's just that we have a more powerful microscope. The speed at which different statements, faux pas, everything is shared is immediate. You know, a hot mic moment and all that kind of thing. And the fact that, you know, within minutes, you can put out a bad statement from a politician. You can put out an arrest, everything else. You can go global with it within minutes. Has irrevocably been an alteration on all this. You can't, you know, so it looks larger because it's under a microscope. But I think people forget that there were literally people that said, no, you know, separate the races. These were not, you know, the extremist party of the whatever. This was Democratic governors of southern states were like, nope, we need to keep people separate because it's a different race of people. Yeah, that kind of thing could not be that extreme today when it comes to that part of it. The other thing was that, quite frankly, you couldn't put a microscope on a whole lot of stuff, like the actual suffering of people on the ground. You couldn't amplify that like you can today. You had to send out a camera crew. You had to send out a radio guy with a recorder. It was much more cumbersome.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. With the coverage that we see now, and it's not just cable, it's website. We've got the internet now, which has opened up a bazillion other avenues of information. Do you think we're at the point now where the news is influencing the politics?
Oh, yeah, again, absolutely it has to. Because, look, today, a government-issued cell phone, right? You know, the thing they used to call Obama phones? Well, those programs are still out there. An Obama phone.
They still call them Obama phones.
Yeah, you can go get you an Obama phone, right? And you have to be on a government program and broke to get one. So you go get one, or at least in some places you have to be on a government program. I don't know the whole thing, but I do know at one time it was like if you have food stamps or you're collecting, you know, welfare or you're collecting Medicaid, we automatically will give you one of these phones.
I'm hoping when the time comes around that my official government Hunter Biden crack pipe matches my Obama phone.
All right, fair enough. But
you know, look out for the bling.
Okay, but here's the thing about that. Now with an Obama phone, you can turn around. They're actually, you know, they're Androids. They're not flip phones. I think they started out as flip phones and stuff. But they're Android phones. You can turn around. Make a video of something that's happening to you, okay, and make it into a news story if you can get it out there with a government-issued phone, okay, for free. You don't have to go buy a TV camera, figure out a way to convince the TV station to run your video, okay, that you recorded on film or on videotape. You don't have to find a way to record with a giant tape recorder. Like you used to have to convince radio stations to play a snippet of something that's actually happening in your community, in your home, on your street. You can instantaneously get out there with something that you can get for free. All right. And that's the individual. Then you have the corporate entities who are, you know, obviously involved in a very large sort of, interesting web that boils down to only a handful of companies really controlling the information and the mass marketing of it. But there are so many different levels here that didn't even exist back then. The moment that your local dog catcher screams the N-word at somebody, that can become national news. 10 minutes later.
Well, but which do you think has the greater power? Which has the greatest influence? Is it the media today or Washington. And I'm of the impression that it's the media has a greater influence.
Well, what do you think, Jimmy James?
Well, they both have similar approval ratings, which are in the toilet. Congress and the media are both 20% approval, maybe less. My last I looked, the only so-called institution the people have respect for was the military.
Okay. I would not object to that point of view. I think that's probably accurate. And frankly, yeah, the media has a much greater sphere of influence, especially due to the fact of what I just brought up, is that there is a wider array. There's a wider spectrum of media available. The internet has certainly changed the game. But also just communication in general having been increased speed-wise, sophistication-wise. You know, I mean, the days of when you had to wait for a typewriter plugged into a phone line to type out some breaking news story, okay, before you could turn around and read it on the air of an expensive station or whatever, radio, television, whatever, or to turn it around and maybe get it printed by the next day in a physical newspaper, you have an obvious increase in speed. And I think it's faster and easier to get things out.
I was thinking about this. I was watching, I can't remember whether it was YouTube or something on TV, some news program where people were discussing the Russia influence hoax in the election of Donald Trump.
Okay.
And they were talking about the length of time that went on. I mean, you were looking like 3 years before it finally fizzled out and, you know, there was no there. But these guys were bringing up points, and I'm sitting here thinking the whole time, yeah, but it was the media that kept that stirred up for 3 years because they would run to people like Adam Schiff. I mean, Rachel Maddow, she based her whole program on the Russian hoax. And once that thing kind of fizzled out and we found out there was no there, she wasn't long for being on MSNBC. She was gone. I'm just wondering, are the reasons that we're reacting to the things and the division, I'll be honest with you, the division between the electorate today, I think is fully responsibility of the media, the way they have, you know, placed each side against each other. But influence wise, I'm thinking, you know, Washington, yes, there were a few people in Congress during the hearings that were able to come out. Adam Schiff was one of the biggest ones, you know, to be able to come out. We have absolute proof, smoking gun, blah, 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 blah. The media, in retrospect to that, look at the Durham report. When was the last time you heard anything about Durham's investigation and all this stuff that was going on? We haven't heard anything in months. Months.
Oh, but there you
Why
go.
Why is that?
But there you go. You know, see,
the media chooses what they're going to cover, and it's because the media is not covering it that we're not hearing anything.
But there you have it.
I think the media is, I don't know. That's the why I feel like maybe they have the greatest amount of influence. If we could just, I don't know, get rid of the media, maybe we could go back to some semblance of peacefulness among parties.
Well, look, the divisions wouldn't be.
Get rid of the political parties.
Yeah, no problem there. I agree with you there. But the thing is nowadays we're so subdivided that, you know, you had harsher divisions, I think, in the past, but because it took time for things to come out and everything else, people coalesced into larger groups back then. Nowadays, I mean, you're literally subdivided into so small a group, eventually your group consists of you and your two best friends, you know, online or otherwise.
Yeah.
Which means
you and the guy at the other end of the bar.
Yeah, that's it. And you don't even have to go to the bar. You just go to Facebook and the two of you bitch back and forth on the same post, you know? Like, that's
there
it.
You go.
And that's all it takes. And now you're a group. Yeah, great. But back in the days, it took time and you had people coming together in larger groups. I think the divisions were harsher. But there's so many different divisions now. You know, you take the...
Well, but then I hear something. Then I hear something like in the last week where Zuckerberg with Facebook or Meta admitted that, you know, hey, yeah, the FBI came to us and said they wanted to, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that's going to be Russian disinformation coming out. Conveniently at the same time that, you know, Hunter Biden's laptop story was hitting the news. And so you've got, I mean, Zuckerberg, you know, he's a little weasel. He's going to look out for himself. But to make a comment like that, yes, the FBI came to us directly and we were in discussions about this certain thing. How many things did the FBI contact them on? You know, how we, that's a subject for another night, is the total dismantling of the FBI. I mean, these guys have gone way beyond their ability to be objective about anything.
These people, the media, you seen that goofball president last night? These people are like rats in a corner. They're in big, big trouble because they're going to be exposed in a few months and they know it. And they're scared to death.
Well, I don't know if I can agree with that. I don't think they're scared to death at all. I think, as per usual, they'll be able to control the spin. And I think that the people that are in power remain in power because they protect each other quite well.
Watch Biden's thing. Last night, well, don't even watch that crap. They realized even CBS didn't play this crap because it's so obliquely political.
Yeah, none of the major networks carried the speech, which I found surprising. I would have thought at least one of the three major networks would have carried it, but you watch that thing and it's like, okay, they've got nothing to do or nothing that they can beat the drum on. So Biden's going to go on nationwide TV or cable and basically demonize his opponents for 20 minutes. I mean, there was nothing to that speech.
Well,
other
short,
than just demonizing Republicans.
It was short enough that, you know, they were able to use about 10 minutes of it on a lot of local news affiliates. So they used half of it immediately on the local news affiliates that played, I don't know, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock news, depending on where you are. So they were able to do that, and I'm pretty sure the cable news networks carried it. Probably not Fox.
Yeah, I watched it on Newsy.
Okay, so Newsy had
NPR, well, NPR didn't even cover it, I don't think.
No, I didn't. I didn't hear that. I don't think there was an audio feed on NPR. I may be wrong about that. Somebody check it, but I didn't see that, you know, as an alert. I saw that CNN was going to carry it live. I guess it was during like Anderson Cooper's time, or maybe it was Don Lemon's time, whatever. During their regular, you know, BS fest, they did that. And I think like the NBC universe carried it, maybe, but I don't think the regular NBC nightly news had it. I don't think
NBC, ABC, CBS, they all had regular programming going on. Like I said, I had to go to Newsy Channel to watch it.
Yeah,
and then I checked the PBS stations; they didn't have it.
No, PBS didn't run it, but I think CNBC and MSNBC did, and CNN did. I think that's who did it. But other than that, and I did catch it in replay later. I didn't catch it live. But it was like, oh, for another time this week, he's going to make a statement from Pennsylvania. You know, and it's like, okay, so we're going to hear about...
Yeah, I can understand. I mean, for someone that doesn't take questions at press briefings and things like that, you know, to get up there and give his 20 minutes of his one-sided rant, you know, okay, he's the president. That's what he wants to do. Let him do it. But to not see any kind of debate or talk on the major, now we'll see it on the Sunday shows, of course, but
yeah, of course,
to not see anything, you know, carried by the major networks, just, I mean, was it just a big yawn to them?
I guess.
Or did they purposely not want to carry it?
Well, you know,
once they got wind of what it was.
There's a couple other omissions though out of the major networks that I want to point out. And one of them is, you know how they constantly had Trump walking in and out of the White House and his comments to reporters, which, you know, usually was like he was, you know, was yelling at people, "You're terrible," you know, when he would ask a question he didn't like and whatever.
Yeah.
So Biden walks in and out of the White House too, and the reporters hound him the same way, in and out of the White House, going to Air Force One or Marine One or wherever he's going, right? And guess what? They don't usually play those. I mean, C-SPAN might run him in the middle of the night.
Because he doesn't engage with the reporters.
Well, I
this,
saw
Biden yeah. has been on a very short leash since he's, you know.
Well, I saw a few
president.
Of them.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a few of them, and he does.
Biden tries to speak, you see the big hand come out. Here comes Dr. Jill.
Well, okay, but these things where he's walking in and out of the White House, I have seen that he does actually engage with the reporters, but they don't play it. They don't run it on, it's not like, oh, we got comment, you know, constantly Trump's comments and also Obama's comments walking in and out of the White House, very commonplace because they would ask him about the stories of the day, you know? And the only thing they ran recently is him going, I don't want to know anything about the investigation at Mar-a-Lago. Like, that's the only clip of that they showed you. But he stops and he kind of answers questions, you know, pretty much like all these guys did. But they don't run it. So that's by omission. They leave that out. I've taken note of that. And there's no handler reaching in to grab him during that time. It's just him deciding to stop, turn, make a face, and not answer, much like Trump used to, you know, when he would start yelling, well, no, you're fake news. I'm not taking a question from you and all that. And they used to play that, you know, 30 times. On every station. But Biden kind of goes,
maybe
yeah.
they don't, it yeah. could be they don't want to put Biden out there looking like some Alzheimer's patient walking to and from things just to prevent that image from being out there.
Well,
protect his chances if he does run. Who knows?
Well, that's the only thing I can think of that's logical.
Yeah, they're shaking hands with invisible people. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, no, that's the only thing I could conclude either. So, anyway, it turns out that we do have the Age of Transitions coming up next. So, BP, want to give Jimmy James the opportunity to put in a last word, and you too, and then we'll get on out of here, and I'll be producing Aaron's show next, apparently. So,
all right.
Yeah, Jimmy James, your final word for this Friday.
Rob Schneider's a good man.
Rob Schneider's a good man.
Have a good
one. All right.
Have a good
one. We will try and
I'll agree on that one.
We'll try and do so. I don't know Rob Schneider too well, but I'm not going to argue because I don't know anything that would contradict that. So, B. Pete, your final word for this Friday.
Everybody out there listening, look, if you've got something you want to discuss, you got something you want to dig into, you got something you still got questions about, we don't care what the topic is, email Chuck or you can email me at bpete1969@yahoo.com. You know, let us know what you want to hear. Let us know what you want to discuss. If you got questions, if you got anything you wanted us to tackle over the air, just let us know. We're glad to jump into it. In the meantime, go to Ocelli.com, hit the donate button, do what you can, help your neighbors, support your local food banks, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Jimmy, for calling in, and thank you, Chuck, for the opportunity.
Listen, I always love doing this, and this was kind of a fun show, so I appreciate it this week for sure. Wish we had more callers, but yeah, hey, by the way, is your email address, like a link on your blog?
Yeah, I mean, if you even go to my blog, VP1969.com. There's a link there. You can contact me through that as well.
Perfect. So in with the show notes, as always, I always put, BP's blog link in with the show notes. You can go there if you can't remember the email address he just gave you and contact him through his blog. And if not, you can write to blindjfkresearcher@gmail.com. That'll also be in with the show notes. And, you can let us know what topics you want us to cover. And give us some ideas. We'll take theme shows on these Fridays. I mean, most of the time we'll do the open lines and open topics, but sometimes we'll do it that way. And I look forward to it. Anyway, thanks to BP for co-hosting. Thanks to Jimmy James for calling in. And thank all of you for listening, because after all, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.
support Chuck O'Chilly at Chili.com. $5 a month is the price of coffee. Go to Chili.com, hit the donate button, and if we all do that part, we will get him as wired as a computer. Don't know if that's it, but just support him. He's a good thing. Great show, great people, and great topics. So that's it. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Of course, you can do it on Patreon.com, or you can, because I have a link there on the website. You can just click the Patreon banner, go there, or become a member at O'Chelly.com. Wasn't trying to do a commercial, but do appreciate you for thinking of it, Nature Boy. Thank you. And also, thank you for your support personally, my friend.